Thanks for listening to the Herd Podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday from 12 to 3 Eastern, 9 to noon Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and FS1. Find your local station for the Herd at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching Herd.
Now let's get this party started. You're listening to Fox Sports Radio.
Ah, here we go. It is hour number two on a Friday live in Los Angeles. It's the Herd, wherever you may be and however you may be listening. Fox Sports Radio, iHeartRadio, FS1, Alex Curry in for Joy Taylor today. I will say this. Everybody wants to be an expert on COVID. I have no idea. I've watched it for a year. Decimate businesses. I will say this. Today is the first day I feel incredibly hopeful. 77% COVID plummeting. It's down 77% in the last 6 weeks. There's an article today that herd immunity and vaccines, and this is right in the middle of the winter. This is when we thought it was going to be the worst. This is February. You know, viruses all in warm weather don't spread as often. We know that, right? You're not getting it off surfaces. Warm weather outdoors is good to kill a virus. So it's down 77%. Vaccines are now available at a much higher percent. The governor of California, and we've been incredibly restrictive, now you can play high school sports as of March.
It's the amazing.
It's amazing. For all the kids to get out there, this has been so tough on kids and families. You know, my kids are out of that space. My kids now, they don't want to be anywhere near me. So, but when you get kids that are 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, those early high school years where sports and social situations are so big for kids.
It's so important.
It's been so punitive against families with young kids. So first day today, I feel like I see the horizon. I see the end of it. It's plummeting. The vaccines are out there. Some are speculating. Washington Post today, herd immunity is greater than we think. I have no idea. I'm just telling you what I'm hearing. But today I feel optimistic about, listen, man, this has been a crazy last 12, 13 months. Today, I feel like positive. Today's a very good day potentially for America. And so it's not a political statement. It's just what I'm reading today makes me very, very happy. By the way, a lot of you are saying, Colin, why are you so goofy on the Carson Wentz to Indianapolis? You're way too optimistic. Here's my rule in life. I listen to successful people. If somebody that had been successful in radio management for 20 years called me and said, I think your show's bad, I'd listen. If somebody on the internet says it that's never worked in radio, what do I care? My financial advisor, my doctor, I rely on people who have been successful over and over and over and over and over. That's how I live my life. That's why trolls don't bother me. If you've never been successful in my space, what would I care about your opinion? What do I care? All opinions are not valid and all opinions aren't equal. So why do I like Carson Wentz to Indy? It's not terribly difficult to figure out because Frank Reich has been successful over and over and over and over. So Andrew Luck's most efficient year as an NFL quarterback was with Frank Reich. He had his highest completion percentage, his best passer rating. He was sacked the least amount of times and the best TD interception ratio, second yards passing per game. So Andrew Luck, best year with Frank Reich. Carson Wentz had his best year with Frank Reich. He was 11-2. It was his best TD to interception ratio. He was sacked the least amount of times and had his second best passer rating. Reich was the Eagles' OC. Even old, creaky, can't-move Philip Rivers in the last year of his career. Now remember, this is the last year. He had his fourth best win-loss record. His third best completion percentage, sacked the second fewest times in his career, and his sixth best pass rate. And again, that's at the end. I mean, Philip didn't have much of a fastball left, and he did this. And oh, by the way, Philip Rivers, in fact, I put this down somewhere this morning, had his best completion percentage ever when he was in San Diego and Reich was the quarterback coach. So I've always looked. Are you successful over and over at something? Whether it's a tax attorney, it's a landscaper, it's an accountant. If you keep being successful at something, I'm going to presume you're going to keep being successful. And Carson Wentz and Andrew Luck are very similar players. They're a little reckless. They're big. They take big chances. They're wickedly talented. They're going to ad-lib sometimes out of trouble and sometimes into trouble. Luck and Wentz are very similar players. I like Luck more than Wentz, but Wentz is super talented. They went to non-traditional football powers, right? They didn't go to Alabama, Ohio State, Oklahoma. So it's real easy. Frank Reich equals good quarterback play. That's why I like it. Again, it's why I don't listen to trolls. If you're not successful, why do I care about your opinion? I listen to successful coaches, successful tax people, successful doctors, successful broadcast executives. That's what I rely on for my advice and my opinions. All right, Andrew Whitworth, 15th NFL season, probably going to end up getting a lot of Hall of Fame votes. He is now joining us live. We haven't talked to him in a while. Last time I talked to Andrew Whitworth, he was protecting a different quarterback. So you got a different quarterback. So let's just start with this. First of all, I hope your offseason's going well. I see a nice case of wine behind you. It looks like you're enjoying the finer things in life. Am I right there?
There you go. Hey, taking a page out of your book, man.
So let's start with this. You were close with Jared Goff. We both like Jared Goff. Were you shocked the Rams moved off Jared Goff?
Yeah, I think it's one of those things as a player, you know, you're used to your locker room and the guys that are in it that you spent time with. And anytime there's a change, I think it's shocking to the guys, and you almost can't believe it for the first couple of days that it's going to be different. But one of the things that's always held true in my 15 years in the league is that it's going to be a different locker room every single time you come back for a new season. And it's just one of the things I think that's tough as a young player to get used to. And it's one of those that I think, you know, the Rams decided the best thing for them to do was to move in a different direction. And as a player, all you can do is, you know what, enjoy the time you had with Jared. And obviously he's a great young man, wish him nothing but the best, but also get to know Matt Stafford and look forward to the opportunity they have there with him.
Okay, so Jared was well-liked. He was a hard worker. People liked him. Are you concerned at all? Matt Stafford comes in, no relationships in the room. What do you know about Matt Stafford? What do you know about his style, his personality? What do you know about him?
Well, I think for Matt, it's somebody I actually know pretty well. One of his closest friends in life was my left guard in Cincinnati with the Cincinnati Bengals and Clint Bowling. And they played at Georgia together. So I've known Matt for a while and know what a competitor he is and really his personality. I think that he's somebody that's been a leader. You look in Detroit, I saw here recently some guys have come out and said he was the most favorite teammate they had while they played in the NFL, and I think it's one of those things you see him as somebody people gravitate towards, and I think he'll be pretty seamless for guys getting to know Matt and understanding what he's about.
Now, Sean McVay's system, and we know this, Andrew, almost as a general rule. Brady's the exception. Generally, you go to a team with a new offense, and it's the second year that it pops. So what will be the – you know that playbook with Sean McVay. What will be the biggest challenges for Stafford and your offense in the new playbook? What's going to be tough for him? What shouldn't be?
Well, I think that really for Matt, I think it's going to be that he's played in a lot of systems. That's a benefit to us is that he's had some different coaches. He's been through some change there in Detroit. So I think he's got a pretty deep understanding of a lot of the offenses in the NFL. And for us, it's going to be getting used to him and his style and maybe even everything from cadences to the style he likes to communicate with on the field and kind of understanding each other. I think that's one of the things as an offense that you get to. And then also with us, we do a lot at the line of scrimmage play. I mean, there's a lot of fast, up-tempo things going on. And it's going to be how do we communicate with one another, understand the way he wants to talk about plays or maybe the way he sees them. And I think getting on that same page, that'll be something big for him coming in, is really playing in that up-tempo, on-the-ball offense and getting to understand the terminology that we've been used to and if there's anything that maybe he likes to communicate in a different way.
When Sean McVay came in, he is this boy wonder, but then reality sets in. You got to win games and win your division, and you guys just happen to be in the toughest division in football. And at the end of this year, I just talked to Les Snead for about 30 minutes the other day. He's like, you know, the reality is the Rams now, the expectations are win the division. Sean McVay, win playoff games. Did you feel at the end of, because I thought you guys actually played well at the end of the year. You gave Green Bay a real fight. Did you sense at the end of the year, expectations have changed a little, Andrew? It's like, now you got to win multiple playoff games with the Rams. This is not just getting into the playoffs.
Yeah, I mean, I played in Cincinnati, went to the playoffs, you know, five seasons in a row, won a couple of division championships, and it was all about win the playoff game, you know. And here in L.A., it's like we won that playoff game against Seattle, and it was almost like people were just like, eh, you know, good win, but not a real big deal. You know, it's one of those things that I think our expectation is to go to the NFC Championship game and try to win it and get ourselves in the Super Bowl every year. And anything short of that, you're obviously upset even if you get to the championship game and lose, but we expect to be playing in that game for an opportunity to go to the Super Bowl. And anything short of that's not enough. And I think that's really where things have changed, is that those expectations continue to rise. And take nothing away from Jared Goff. I mean, the guy won 40-something games over the last 4 years. You know, he did a heck of a job. But I think that the expectations continue to rise, and I think that's what the Rams are looking for when they try to say, hey, we're going to make a bold move and say that maybe this is what gets us over that edge to where every year we're competing in that title game.
By the way, you had missed seven games last year with an injury. You could certainly retire. You've obviously done well for yourself. Are you going to play? Because, I you know, it's funny. You were a topic of conversation the other day with your general manager. I was on the phone, and I said, look, I'm looking at your roster, and I don't think if Andrew retires, I don't think you have a guy behind him. Not that that's left tackle's third or fourth most important position on the field. Are you playing? Is Matt Stafford going to have you protecting his butt, I guess is what I'm asking.
Well, Colin, I'm one of those guys, I keep it real. So obviously it's an off season. It's you got to get – I believe that no matter whether you've played 15 years or 2 years, you earn your spot every week. And so I'm going to work with the preparation to play this season. That's the mentality and the attitude. But obviously everything has to go right and everything has to keep moving in a great direction to be there and be able to play at the level that I expect. So, yeah, that's the plan. But nothing's guaranteed. So I look forward to each and every day getting that opportunity to fight for that spot and leading this football team next fall.
You love football, though. You were pained not playing. You love football.
Yeah, I mean, you know, if I look back at it and I'm real with myself, it's probably a little bit of a stretch to try and play in the playoffs. And, you know, I mean, really, you know, after talking to Dr. Elichos, we really felt like it was a 16 to 20 week injury, tearing both PCL and MCL. And I played in basically 7.5 weeks. And, you know, first couple weeks after those games, I was a little regretful in the sense of how good it felt. But, you know, now it's getting better, and hopefully we're headed in the right direction and getting ready and getting healthy. And, yeah, I mean, I love the game, and it was one of the hardest things I've ever had to do, to sit out and watch it, that's for sure.
By the way, personal question, I have gray in my beard, and you have gray in your beard. Are you the only Ram player with gray facial hair right now? Be honest, you're 39. Are you the only one?
The odds are pretty good. I don't know anybody else that's got it. I mean, we got a couple maybe that might have some blonde in there. Maybe Sean does, but... you know, I definitely got to be the only one with gray, but I think that's been going on for quite some time. I'm in the stage of trying to figure out whether you try and hide it or keep it going, or, you know, just trying to make those decisions to look better.
It's good seeing you. We want you back. Matt Stafford wants you back for sure. Nice talking to you.
Hey, appreciate it, Colin. Glad you're feeling better, man.
All right, thanks, buddy. Rams offensive lineman Andrew Whitworth, 39 years old. He has played for 15 years at left tackle.
That's incredible.
It's an incredible accomplishment. 15. You know, I just got into this conversation, Alex, the other day. I said, outside of the Chiefs offensive line, you think of the NFL, it's, oh, the NFL's done a good job to keep their league safer. Tampa was totally healthy by the end of the year. Mm-hmm. Green Bay was just missing one player, David Bakhtiari. They were healthy. Seattle was healthy. New Orleans was healthy. Outside of the Chiefs' offensive line, their defense was healthy. Their weapons were healthy. Their backs were healthy. Cleveland was missing Olivier Vernon, but they were mostly healthy. I mean, it's for a sport that's as physical as the NFL, the Rams got Andrew Whitworth back. They were healthy. Just the Chiefs' O-line. That's it. By and large, your final six or seven teams, you know what I mean? It's for as tough as this sport. I mean, I watch the NBA every night. Last night I watched the Lakers and Nets. There's like four starters not available. That's basketball. So maybe it's luck. Maybe it's safety measures. But the fact that Andrew Whitworth can play left tackle for 15 years, the league's doing something right. That's an unbelievable. You're facing the best athletes, the most physically daunting athletes every week, pass rushers. He plays 15 years. He's had one stretch of seven games he missed. That's pretty amazing.
And he had a great attitude.
Yeah, he's a great dude. All right. Don't go anywhere. Oh. Remember when you told me Giannis was going to be the next LeBron? See what happened last night? All right.
Want more Herd? The Herd streams 24 hours a day, 7 days a week within the iHeartRadio app. Search Herd to listen live or on demand whenever you'd like.
Fox Sports presents Voices, Season of Change, a look back at the 2020 NASCAR season and the impact of positive social change, hosted by Kurt Menefee, Jeff Gordon, Larry Reynolds. Fox Sports Voices tomorrow at noon Eastern, 9 Pacific, on Fox.
Oh, it's my turn to talk.
It's your turn.
Sorry, I'm just looking at some Dak Prescott stuff. Sometimes driving great, sometimes there's winter and it's not. Like when it's pouring outside, sleet or cold, get Michelin wiper blades. They hug your windshield like Michelin tires hug the road. Get yours today on Amazon Prime. Maybe I'll get my act together here. By the way, I've got Sam Amick before the end of the hour. Eric Mangini last hour. I'm gonna hold off on this for a little bit. But man, if I have to hear Giannis is gonna run this league. 5-game losing streak in Milwaukee, and he's played all 5 games. You know who hasn't? Drew Holiday. He's not even the MVP for his own team. Drew Holiday is the most valuable Buck. He's not the most talented. We talked about this yesterday. Don't confuse talent with valuable. My wife is more valuable in the family. I, of course, am much more talented. But value is often misinterpreted. Is that Giannis is talented. They're on a 5-game losing streak, and they've lost to bad teams. Why? Because he's a talented player with absolute limitations who needs lots of help from somebody else running the show. Drew Holiday's out with COVID or COVID protocols. They can't win. So this is what I always talk about. Kevin Durant's great. Warriors won before him. Warriors now with Steph back and winning after him. The Nets have been on winning streaks. When he doesn't play, Kevin Durant's talented. Valuable? I'm not saying he doesn't have some value. It's not zero and a lot. But this Giannis thing has always been, you know, we're always saying that you know, he's going to be the next LeBron. He's going to be the face of the league. No, he's just a talented guy. There is no next LeBron. There is no next LeBron. He's the greatest player maybe ever, and certainly in the last 15 years. Everybody kept telling me every golfer was going to be Tiger Woods. There's one Tiger in the history of the planet. There'll never be another Tiger. There'll never be another guy that takes over a sport like golf for 10 years. It's just, there's never going to be another Serena. You know, I'm not saying athletes don't get better, but when you get these once-in-a-lifetime athletes, there is no other Usain Bolt. It's not like some guy is going to clip a second off his time. Like, you just get these generational elite, you're not going to see it again. There is never going to be a Jordan. Jordan was a scorer. LeBron's much more about distribution and kind of engineering the both sides of the ball. But there is no Jordan. Kobe was close, but he's no Jordan. There's never going to be another LeBron. So anytime a Zion's not as good as LeBron. Giannis isn't close to it. Giannis can't shoot. Giannis shoots 82% within 3 feet. The minute he gets within 3 to 10 feet, he shoots 33%. That's his game. He's really good around the rim. Then it all dries up. He can't shoot free throws. He can't shoot threes. And I'm ranting. Alex Curry with the news.
No. Turn on the news.
This is the Herd Line.
There's
news.
No next LeBron. Can we just stop saying that?
I'm with you on that one. We're going to get to LeBron in a second, but we're going to start with the big news that came yesterday. The Eagles traded away Carson Wentz, paving the way for Jalen Hurts to be the starting quarterback next season. But the job is not just going to be handed to him. Philadelphia reportedly plans to bring in competition for Hurts this offseason. Now, I'm all for a little healthy competition. I think it keeps people on their toes, keeps them from being lazy, keeps them working hard. But you just got out of kind of a messy quarterback situation, and the same day you come out and say this to your, your quarterback?
What is it saying? Is it saying Philadelphia overdrafted Jalen Hurts? You draft a quarterback in the second round, you're saying he's a franchise quarterback.
Yeah.
Now, you draft a quarterback in the fourth round, you're saying he's a project. But if you go in the second round and draft a quarterback, and by the second year, you're not sure, you probably drafted the wrong guy because you're seeing him every day at practice. So to me, it says, because I always thought he was a third round quarterback. I didn't think he was like a second round pick. So it tells me you overdrafted him. So you made the mistake of drafting him when you had Carson Wentz and puncturing his confidence. And now you overdrafted him and you don't really trust Jalen Hurts. So, I mean, you go find the last 10 years quarterbacks drafted first, second round. I mean, they had to pry Garoppolo away from Belichick. That was the highest he'd ever drafted a quarterback. Okay? So if you don't think Jalen Hurts is your quarterback, either overdrafted him or you're screwing up the quarterback room again.
I said it yesterday. You want to feel wanted. Everyone wants to feel wanted, especially the most important position on your team, a quarterback. And if they don't feel wanted, it messes with their confidence. He's a young guy, so it's going to be an interesting situation to see how that all plays out. But moving on to Anthony Davis, he will miss more time than the Lakers originally expected. Frank Vogel confirmed AD will be out 4 weeks after team doctors reevaluated his injuries last night. The team had hoped he would be able to return right after the All-Star break, but that timeline is now extended as the team looks to take a conservative approach in bringing him back. And I think this is smart. More often than not, we see athletes come back too soon and they re-injure themselves. Yes, it's hard not having your number two out there, but you still have LeBron playing, and it allows other guys on the team to step up and maybe step into new roles and get more minutes.
I mean, I just think Anthony Davis is the best two in the history of the league.
Yeah.
I've never felt you can rely on him. I think he's super talented. I don't think he has the personality, the drive, the toughness to be a one. But we confuse that because he's so gifted. So we think he's a one. James Harden, by the way, is a two. He doesn't have the commitment. You can't rely on him. He's not going to play on the defensive end. Kyrie is a two or a three. So we confuse. Oh, he's talented. He's a one. No, LeBron's a one. Chris Paul's a one. Chris Paul doesn't have to be the most talented guy. He's a one. Mm-hmm. Steph's a one.
Yep.
And so Anthony Davis to me is, I can't rely on him physically. I thought he had a bad year to start this year. Offensively, he was down in every category. So as long as your expectation with Anthony is he's a great two, then it's all good. Then it's all good.
Well, let's talk about that number one, because LeBron James reached another career milestone last night. With a free throw at the end of the first half, he became just the third player in NBA history to score 35,000 points in his career. The only other players to hit that mark are Kareem Abdul-Jabbar and Karl Malone, who are still ahead of him on the league's all-time scoring list. Now, I think this just adds to the legend that is LeBron James. And I feel lucky that we get to kind of sit back and have a front row seat to this. As you mentioned, this is a once in a generation player.
Well, he's also really not known primarily as a scorer. Like if you, LeBron's going to end up either the first or second leading scorer in league history. And he's really known as more Magic Johnson. He's much more of a facilitator than he is a pure scorer. There's a stat years ago. My favorite LeBron stat ever is a high school stat. So LeBron James, his junior year of high school, and I'm not exact on the numbers, but he averaged something like as a junior in high school, 25 a game. And he went from like, you know, 18 to 25. So you would think his senior year in high school, he averaged 40.
Yeah.
He averaged 1 point more. In high school,
yeah.
What does that tell you? LeBron's never been about just taking over a game and scoring all the points.
Mm-mm.
He's always been a facilitator at his heart. That's the core of who he is. So, and all the way back to high school, he could have scored 40. It wasn't what he was about. And so the fact that he's going to end up the first or second scorer, and it's not really his go-to, that's one of his greatest arguments as the greatest player. That would be like Michael Jordan finishing all-time number one or two in assists when Michael was a scorer. And say he also had the most assists in NBA history. You'd be like, that's not even really his thing. When you're when you can dominate something that's not your thing, Jordan was a scorer, and that's where all his numbers lie. LeBron is a facilitator, and his offensive numbers from scoring blow everybody outside of Kareem away. It's incredible.
I love it.
Alex for the news.
Well, that's the news.
And thanks for stopping by.
The Herd Line News.
You know, I've been saying this for the last year. I'm over the Dak Prescott contract situation. You know, pay him or not. About a year ago, I kept bringing people on from Dallas, and they were like, oh, he's going to get the contract. And I said, listen, if you date somebody for 8 years and you don't commit to a marriage, you're probably not going to get married. Like, you're just making excuses now. Well, we can live together. We can hang out. At 8 years, you make up. My wife told me, listen, you get about an hour. Make up your mind. I didn't have. She just said, it was like, listen, you got about 45 minutes or I'm out of here. So not that I'm not completely happy and wouldn't have done it anyway. But the point being is, commit to something or not. So my thing always with Dak has been, if they wanted to pay him, they would have. They could have paid him 4 years ago. They could have paid him 3 years ago. They could have paid him last year. They won't. They're not paying him. And the latest story is they're a long way off. But I will. Dallas has a little bit of a dilemma because I was thinking about this morning with Carson Wentz going to the Colts. There are certain divisions where the quarterback play is so great, you have to really constantly evolve. Take the NFC West. I mean, good God. You got Kyler Murray, Matt Stafford, Garoppolo, and Russell Wilson. I mean, Kyler is, numbers-wise, the least impressive, but he's going into year three, and he's no question a franchise quarterback. That's probably your best quarterback division. Give me another division. How about AFC West? Mahomes and Herbert are elite talents. Derek Carr's damn good. So three of the four, you're like, that's why Denver is already rumored to be looking to move up. They have to. You can't have the fourth best quarterback in a division. So nothing against Drew Lock, but Denver's like, look at our division. You've got the AFC South now. So Deshaun's still Houston. Carson Wentz now with the Colts. Trevor Lawrence is going to go to Jacksonville and Tannehill. You got to keep up. If Tannehill's the worst quarterback in a division, that's a pretty good division. AFC North. Lamar Jackson's won 80% of his games. Burrow's clearly got it. Say what you want. Baker got to a playoff. Big Ben's the worst right now in that division, but he'll be okay early in the seasons. He old and deteriorates late. Then you go to the NFC East. It's a clown show. You got Daniel Jones. Half of New York wants a new quarterback. Jalen Hurts, the Eagles don't even believe in. Washington doesn't really have a plan. You look at Dak Prescott, and it's like, the dilemma for Dallas is, if he stays upright next year, he is clearly the best quarterback in the division. Clearly. But when you pay him a lot, are you out of the Super Bowl race? So that's the thing with Dallas, is they don't have to compete against their division with quarterbacks. If Dak is healthy, easily the best quarterback. And generally that means guaranteed playoffs, guaranteed playoff wins. But I think the dilemma for Dallas is, Their division's so unstable at quarterback that they don't have to have the best quarterback to win their division. But if you pay them big money, you're out of the Super Bowl lottery. You're just not going to win it if you're paying Dak $35 million. But it is interesting. It's more leverage for Dak, is that look around my division. At least you may not love my arm. At least I'm productive and stable. There is so much instability in the NFC East right now that if Dak's upright, easily most productive quarterback. Again, if Dallas was in the NFC West and they had Russell Wilson and Matt Stafford and Kyler Murray, then you're sitting waking up saying, hey, we may have the fourth most talented quarterback. Then Dallas has some leverage against Todd France and Dak Prescott. Dak's got all the leverage. Look at my division. I'm the best quarterback. Who's going to give up the best quarterback in a division? You're nuts. And you probably are not to sign him. And again, if you sign him to a franchise tag at $37 million, you can't do anything. If you give him a long-term deal, and then you can start manipulating the cap if you're the Cowboys, play around with the money, give him a lot of guaranteed, you know, don't pay him for two more years big, like Kansas City with Mahomes. Get 2 or 3 years out of it before you have to really pay him. But, God, that division is just a tire fire at quarterback. Sam Amick, update us on some NBA thoughts. The Bucks are a mess. How good is Brooklyn? What to do with AD who's hurt again? Cremo Barber Grade products are designed to soothe and relieve that beard itch. Tame moisturize in style. Comes in cedar forest. That's what I use. I like to smell like a cedar forest. Mint and cooling and more. Available at major retailers, Amazon, and CremoCompany.com. C-R-E-M-O. I love their stuff.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio, FS1, and the iHeartRadio app.
Supplement I take every morning, M-Drive, powerful ingredients backed by science, free shipping, 60-day money-back guarantee. Don't let age beat you. Refind your prime with M-Drive. It was funny. We had Antoine Walker was on the other day. Were you doing the show when Antoine Walker was on, or was that Wednesday?
I think it was Wednesday.
So we were talking to Antoine Walker, who won a title with the Heat and played for the Celtics for years. And he was talking about Giannis. And, you know, Giannis has been seen kind of as the next LeBron. But he said, what Giannis, we have the sound of this. What Giannis is great at, he's great at. But he's got gaping holes in his game, and he's not working on us. Here was Antoine Walker.
If he's not in the open floor, it's very hard for Giannis to score. And he has to figure that out. His offensive skill level has to get up if he wants to compete with the Kevin Durants, with the LeBron James of the world, if he wants to be in the championship contention. If not, they will continue to get bounced in the playoffs because of his lack of offensive performance.
Not a lot of finesse to his game. It's interesting. He shoots 82% within 3 feet of the rim. It plummets to 33% from 3 to 10 feet. Then 10 to 16, it's 30%. Then it's 27% on three. So there's gaping holes in his game. And whereas, LeBron, he keeps adding little components to his game. With Giannis, what he's great at, but you do hit certain ceilings. And there is a way now to defend him. And with that, Sam Amick, who's been covering the NBA for 16 years for The Athletic now, it is interesting, is that I can think a guy is great, Sam. I can love him as a player. But I can also say he's got a ceiling, and it does feel like with Giannis, when he gets to the playoffs, the game slows down. It's a little more situational. There is now a book on how to defend Giannis to some degree, is there not?
Oh, sure. Yeah, Eric Spoelstra and the Heat crew, you know, wrote that book in the playoffs last year, and night after night in that series, we were confounded by the Bucks' inability to counter and Giannis' inability to counter, and then you're seeing that trend continue this year. Now, the Drew Holiday addition was supposed to fix some of that, and I will qualify this struggle right now. I mean, not having Drew is a very big deal, but to your point, Colin, two-time MVP, a guy who, you know, I voted for both times and Defensive Player of the Year, you expect him to be able to carry this group better than they are right now.
Yeah. It's interesting with Brooklyn. I watched them last night. I watched about half the game against the Lakers, and they got hot, and the Lakers weren't, but they're missing starters. You know, it's one of those games I don't take a ton from. But I do think you can argue that Nets have three of the top five offensive players in terms of just if we had a horse contest or a one-on-one contest in the NBA, Kyrie, Harden, and KD would be three of the top five guys probably. But you look at them, and I think to myself, okay, what made the Warriors special wasn't just their offense. It's that Klay Thompson's a great defender, and Draymond in his prime was a terrific defender. I don't think this is a championship team as it's currently constructed. Do you see it as that?
I don't, but I also then project in the playoffs and say, who's going to beat them? Because we have a lot of uncertainty right now among all the contenders. The Lakers are scuffling without Anthony Davis. But that formula, you know, high-end offense, but top 10 defense is typically historically what you have to be a championship team. And the Nets are awful on that end. And I mean, Kevin Durant is a guy that I think is kind of going to have to be their savior defensively and play a lot of small ball and put him at the five. And I can see that working, you know, in short stints, but that's a lot to ask of a guy who plays like an MVP on the offensive end. And so they're so interesting. I can't remember a team with this kind of dichotomy. It doesn't mean they can't improve defensively. I think they can. It's funny, never thought I would hear this, talking to scouts about James Harden being an X factor defensively for them, because as much as the narrative with James has been that he simply doesn't defend, that in the post and at times when he puts the effort forth, he's a guy that is big and strong and has some ability on that end. You know, they're going to have to fix it, but man, offensively, they just overwhelm you. And so I'm not ready to take them out of that discussion in terms of being a championship team by any means. I just don't know how they fix the defense.
Listen, I still don't think Embiid and Simmons are perfect together, but they're number one in the East. It's Tobias Harris has played well. Daryl Morey, he'll always say the right stuff, but in the end, I still don't think it works, but it's winning. So are they an interesting team at the trade deadline to you, or do you think they're just going to run it through with Doc for 1 year?
We'll see. I mean, any team that Daryl is in charge of the front office is going to be aggressive at a trade deadline. They've added some shooting that has helped on the offensive end with Steph Curry, Danny Green. Korkmaz has been good. the Tobias Harris thing to me, and admittedly, I'm going to write about him in the next couple of days. I talked to him yesterday. I think he is an incredibly important part of their program because he's not known as a star. His numbers this year are all-star worthy. You're talking 21 points, 7 boards, 50, 40, 90. Honestly, I mean, who am I to tell Doc how to coach? I think Doc needs to let him shoot a few more threes. He's not shooting a lot, but his percentages are fantastic, and they're down a little bit from last year in terms of volume. So Tobias's play is big. He's tried to get better defensively. They're a little bit deceiving analytically. If you look at the record, they look like an elite team, and I think they are. But some of the advanced numbers tell you that they're kind of teetering and kind of pushing towards mediocrity a little bit, and the shooting needs to get better, the defense needs to get better. I don't know yet what I think. And with Joel, man, MVP caliber year so far, but you're always holding your breath on the health front, just hoping that he's going to be available.
Listen, one of the few things I got right, I said Zion's body, don't outthink your eyes, that if he can shoot free throws well, he's going to live at the line because he initiates so much contact. I watched him at Duke, and I said, right. It's a skinny jeans league now. Nobody wants contact. Even it's a bunch of 6'11 guys that weigh 240. I said, this kid is Karl Malone, whereas he's just going to live at the free throw. I'm going to shoot 7 or 8 a night, and if he can hit 75%, he's going to give you 25 a night. I got that one right. Are you surprised? Right. At how dominant, I mean, his numbers, he leads the NBA in paint scoring, I think, by a lot. Are you surprised by Zion? What do you make of him so far?
I'm not surprised. I was really surprised at the early season struggle. It was like it was a different guy from the guy that we saw last year, where in a small sample size, he was transcendent and the kind of, you know, player that we thought he was going to be. So that small little hiccup, I don't know if you blame kind of the post-bubble fatigue or even the conditioning and the program stuff that got impacted because the league decided to start the season earlier than people thought they were going to start. Whatever it was, he had that blip, and then he got back to doing the type of stuff that he started doing last year. He's fantastic, and New Orleans is obviously figuring it out. And I'm curious, you know, if you spin it forward to the trade deadline, March 25th, New Orleans is a team that had been pretty widely known to be out there with some of their players. You know, but now that you're playing a little better, you know, does that impact how Dave Griffin sees what he wants to do?
Do you think deep down they would never admit it, but this was the year it felt like LeBron, as an aged player, was going to kind of subtly hand the baton to AD? It's like, listen, we know it's LeBron's team, but big fella, I just got out of a bubble. I'm not getting much time off. And AD came out, Sam, and he didn't have a very good offensive year. He struggled a little bit. Do you think deep down in the recesses, the Lakers are a little disappointed with AD's performance this year?
Sure. I mean, it depends on who we're talking about. You know, Rob Pelinka, their GM, is generally kind of an uplifter, so he's certainly not going to either admit to that or maybe even has thought that. But, I mean, it's hard to not have that be the takeaway. He's not been as dominant as he was last year. And with LeBron, in terms of, you know, I don't know what the Lakers thought. I'd be pretty reticent to say that LeBron was handing the torch because he's coming off a year where he thought he should have been the MVP. He went out of his way to tell us that he thought he should have been the MVP and that it upset him that Giannis got it. And so I feel like, you know, LeBron had another chapter to write in terms of, you know, wanting to go get another MVP award, which he's working on right now. But the AD component is big because when he was there, he wasn't playing all that well. And now you have a tough spot where LeBron is, it's a little bit like Giannis where he's trying to carry the load, not doing very well. LeBron's doing a much better job, but this isn't what you want a couple months into the regular season, is for LeBron having to, you know, pick up the slack with AD when he's there or not. It's just not been a good year for AD.
By the way, a minute left. I've always loved Chris Paul, but he's not very likable. But he goes to the Suns, and what do you know? The Suns are now excellent. I think he's the most underrated player in the last 10 years. I think you get it, but I don't think players want to admit it because he's hard to get along with. How do you describe him? Everywhere he goes, they win. Everywhere.
I mean, he flipped the script. You know, he comes out of Houston with the optics around him not being very positive because it didn't work with James Harden. I give him a ton of credit. In OKC, it worked wonderfully well. That success leads to the Phoenix move, and now you're seeing the same story in a different city. Devin Booker, DeAndre Ayton, learning from him. I looked at the splits today. about a 12-point difference on off floor for Chris, and that's far and away the best on the team. You know, Devin is having a good year. They're actually a little better when Devin's not on the floor, which we've never said about Chris Paul. He just makes guys around him better. He's embracing the leadership component of this challenge. And a little bit like LeBron, his best friend, he's got that chip on his shoulder of, you know, everybody's trying to bury me and say that I'm too old to get it done, and we're seeing that's not the case.
Yeah. God, I love watching him play. He's so old school. He's feisty. Yeah. He yells at teammates. He's my kind of guy. Sam, it's good talking to you. Keep doing your great work for the Athletic.
You got it, Colin.
All right, good stuff.
Thanks, brother. Be good.
You bet. Yeah, Chris Paul is way old. I remember when he came out of Wake Forest, and he was chippy, and he used to get in fights. And isn't it amazing that Wake Forest has given us Tim Duncan and Chris Paul, Hall of Famers, first ballot guys? And it's nothing against Wake Forest, but it's I mean, they're arguably a top point guard in the history. After Magic, Chris Paul's in a very short group, and Tim Duncan's as good a forward. I mean, he's in the Larry Bird, LeBron class. I mean, little Wake Forest. How about that? Most life-changing sleep is about what's underneath. That's why I sleep on a Casper mattress. 1,500 perforations create a cooling system so effective, you won't be awake to notice. Hour 3 on a Friday. Next.